Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
The lamest Christmas song ever.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year.
Some seriously lame shit, man. Burl Ives, give me a break.
But have a cup of cheer.
Why are you playing it then, Mac? Hey, shut up. Joining me is Jeff Kenney, who we continue our interview from last week. What's up, man?
Good to hear from you, Mike. Everything's going good.
Really? That's the first time I've ever heard you say that in my life.
Well, you know, it's going pretty good.
All right, Jeff, retired colonel, United States Marine Corps grunt, talked about his career last week. I want to talk about your deployments to – that was like a thumbnail of your – that was a very, very short thumbnail of your career. I want to talk about your deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Okay.
Let's start there. First time you go to Iraq or Afghanistan is when?
In 2005.
All right. Where'd you go? What'd you do?
I was the operations officer for the 15th MEU, and we went into northern Babil province, southern Baghdad, just a little bit north of Mamadiyah. And we established a battle space, basically a brigade minus size battle space that was bounded on the west or the east by the Tigris River, and on the west it bled into the Marine battle space in Anbar. So we had like Abu Ghraib as our western border, down to I think it was Fob Kalsu, which was a fob along the route going up from Kuwait.
The Mamadiyah shithole, Iskandaria shithole.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. No, that's the area where Army had a couple of the following year. The Army had a couple. They got typical the way at the time Al Qaeda operated in the region.
Right.
But they would watch you constantly, and if you hung anybody out, they would test where your QRF came from. And then,
right.
And they would try to yoke literally and capture those people, and they did it to an Army cab unit when I was there, in the Mamadiyah Iskandaria area, which is down the river, towards as Jeff said, south of Baghdad, and they wound up they ambushed the QRF, and they killed one soldier, took two others, and absolutely. They had to identify them by their DNA. They couldn't.
Right.
And so it's horrible shit.
I think we relieved those guys. And then there was, for an interim before we were there, there was a Reserve Marine Battalion 124 that was in there, I think. And we relieved them. But what I remember about that area was it was partially urban and partially rural because we had the route bug and we had the Tigris on our east, which right across from on the river was Salman Pak, which is another bad area, historically a training ground for Saddam, where they had mock-ups of jet airliners different nefarious folks would practice doing hijackings on. So we had that area, and in the MEU we had a battalion, which was 1st Battalion, 1st Marines, was our ground combat element, and that was commanded by Major General Dave Furness. And the MEU was commanded by Tom Greenwood, who's a colonel. And we also had a Maritime Special Purpose Force, which basically was a force recon crew with a lot of enablers and so forth that did like high-speed raids, the same thing pretty much that the Marine Raid Force now does for the MEU. And we were rolling up a lot of guys based on single-source intel we'd get from the Army headquarters we work for, and I noticed as we're rolling these guys up that, you know, you, if you dug into a little bit, for example, we rolled up one guy who he was named by a guy who owed him money as being a terrorist,
yeah.
Another Iraqi.
Yeah.
So it just seemed to me even though there's a lot of activity, a lot of action, I didn't think it was contributing to the successful propagation of our counterinsurgency effort. I mean, that was my opinion.
No, and you would see that a lot. If they knew that you would move on single source stuff, all of a sudden this guy, you know, Kenny pissed me off, right? He's got those crazy Christmas decorations on. Get on the phone. Hey, in his backyard, you're going to find this, that, and the other thing. And he's this and was linked to this. Do you remember a city by the name of Eusephia?
Yeah, Eusephia. It's named after Joseph. Eusephia, yep.
Oh, man. Poor Joseph. That place, nothing good ever came out of it. It's kind of like Boston.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Boston.
It was a nasty area. Right. And I really saw, you know, it changed my whole way of looking at tactics about the thing. For instance, General Furness had taken he was a BLT, so he had a tank platoon, and he had an AAV platoon, and he put it together what he called Task Force Hardball, and they basically patrolled the MSR that ran up from Kuwait,
right,
in our area, and they call that Task Force Hardball. And then he had his grunts in the urban area, and also in the rural area. Basically, the guys in the rural area, it looked like they were going through like Mekong Delta, you know, and there's a lot of activity there. And what we were seeing was the AQIZ and also the remnants of the Baathist.
Hold on. AQIZ is?
It's the Al-Qaeda in Iraq, the Iraqi zone.
Right.
And so what they were doing is they would grab a family that was leaving their house to go get water. They get in their car, and they have to take their whole family because there's no, you know, everything was, security, of course, was very bad. And these guys would stop somebody. They had their own checkpoints, and they would say, all right, we're going to take your kid. We're going to put something in your trunk, and when you go get your water, drop this off, go to this address, you don't have to get out of your car. And what would happen is they'd follow these people. I mean, this is one or two examples of this. They'd follow them, and when they got close to U.S. forces, they'd detonate the IED they had in the trunk. So, you know, it was, you realize we're on a whole nother plane of, you know, of enemy than, you know, what we had expected, I think, you know. And so it was, trying to deal with that. But I noticed one thing, too. The only way we're going to win that type of deal was, first, we needed more people because we were rolling over IEDs because we were driving 25 miles an hour. If we had been walking 2.5 miles an hour, we would have seen at least 70% of them. You know, it wouldn't have been that much of an issue.
Right.
And two, I don't care how benevolent and how noble your military force is. If you're in another country telling people what's what, got off to the side of the road and we're driving by, you know, shooting pen flares and pop-ups at them to get them to pull over, eventually they're going to get pissed off. And so I thought the only way we could win this thing is that Iraqis who are, you know, anti-terrorist and pro, you know, representative form of government had to take over. And that's what really started to sell me in a visceral way on a whole advisor issue, you know.
That's where it had to go. It was so frustrating. You'd see Donald Trump, you'd see Don Rumsfeld go on TV.
Oh, yeah.
And his snarky fucking ass, you know, they have everybody they need there. They've had everybody they asked there. And then, you know, you remember the video of General Shinseki before the war getting asked, you know, how many people do you think? He said, well, it probably, if we do it by the war plan, it's going to be close to 300,000. We had less than 150 there.
And
Rumsfeld fired his ass for saying that, right?
Anybody else who said, General Newbold, another guy who was.
Right. He quit. I'm out.
You know, it was very frustrating. And, you know, it was, so when I came home, you know, when the Mew came home, and that Mew was kind of action-packed. Like, on the way over there, the tsunami hit.
Bro, I remember.
Yeah, so we were.
You were the Mew 3?
Yeah.
Holy shit. So you'd yoke for Nesson and say, hey, listen, killer, here's what I got for you today. Get out there and make me proud there, young man.
When we were in IOC, Dave and I, either I would have like a leg in one of the sexes that he ran, or vice versa. So we spent like, and you remember how it was in Cuenca. You'd be, right. You'd put the lieutenants in the defense, and like 2 o'clock in the morning, you and like the guy who actually was a specialist in that particular abomination we're putting lieutenants through, you'd go get coffee and you just try and stay awake. So you end up bullshitting a lot.
Right.
So him and I spent a lot of time like that together, and then we were on ship. I mean, it was a long float. I mean, you had to float from California all the way to, all the way to the Gulf. So it was like, him and I lived about 50 yards from each other on the ship. So, and of course, the ground combat element of the Marine Expeditionary Unit is really, they're the worker bees of the, everybody in the MEU works,
right.
But they're the real muscle and they're the threat of the MEU,
Right.
So everything we did was very closely coordinated with him.
I think it's the coolest military experience you have when you go with your friends, because you have this there's a level of confidence and this implicit communication from knowing guys for years, and I'm sure you were familiar with Colonel Greenwood. And so it's just really when it does line up and you do go with guys you know like that, it's awesome, because I mean the pressure every day, and you need that. You need that familiarity where you can walk in and be certain that somebody knows what they're doing and knows exactly what you want, and it's really cool.
And Mac, that's a very good point, particularly with us, because if you remember, Colonel Greenwood's dad was the editor of the Gazette.
I do.
And he used to call over there and say, "Hey Kenny, what's the 14 or the principles of war? What's this MUSMA stand for?" And I'm like, "Oh my God!" It was kind of like Jeopardy with General Mattis. Where is he asking me because he don't know, or is he asking me because he wants to see if I know?
Yeah.
His dad was a great guy, he'd call up and with questions about stuff because he had to edit the Gazette, I knew him, and if you don't remember, but because you were already gone, but one of the last classes, I think one of the last classes we had in 1993 was Greenwood's younger brother, Dan,
uh-huh.
Probably going to be a general now. He came through, I used to run that weekend. Remember that weekend effects we used to do?
Yeah,
at the end with all live fire?
Yeah.
R5. And then
I love it. Let me tell you, I invented that son of a bitch, and I love that shit.
Yeah, I know. That was great, by the way.
Yeah.
And, we kept FEX 2.5, we called it, remember?
And it was the excuse to keep him in the field over the weekend.
Yes, because we got the – I remember. It made you the automatic enemy of range control.
But I'll tell you what, we did all this – we did – the kind of training that you should do to get people to fight at night,
mm-hmm.
crawl, walk, run. And then when they actually did our live fire night attack, it was, I remember you'd have staff NCOs that had never done one in their life and were scared shitless to do it. And they were going through IOC. And when they saw that, they were like, "Oh man, what's this going to be like?" And at the end of it, to hear their comments, like, "I was scared shitless to do this thing." But the way we did it, the way we built into it, it was awesome. So I was really
did,
cool.
And if you remember, that's exactly right. What we did was we basically did a reenactment of the way Terry Allen, General Terry De La Mesa Allen, who he was a CG first of the Big Red One. He got relieved in Sicily, but then he got another division, and they specialized in the night attack. And the way he did, he trained his battalions to do those night attacks is what we did. We didn't do the kind of shit can the old method of the Korean War.
So let me explain this to you. So I'm before Kenny. I get there, and we're doing these night attacks, and here's what you do. You send these small patrols. They find the way to the enemy's, like, forward edge of the battle area, which normally is about 100 meters from his position, at night, falling down, breaking branches, making all kinds of fucking noise, right? And then while doing that, they lay, like, comm wire so they can follow where they used to be, and chem lights. And so you're going through this, and you're thinking, look, if they're this fucked up, why are we doing this? Let's just fucking walk up there. If they're dead asleep to allow us to do this in their FIBA, right, then fuck them. Let's go get them right now. Like, what are we fucking around for? And who?
It was so stupid. Remember, because I was a lieutenant when I went through, and of course they did it that way when I was a sucker lieutenant.
I
remember that you had to say, like, blue meant kneel, and then red meant stand, And then another color meant assault, you know? I'm like, why don't they just say kneel? You know?
It was just, look, it was the stupidest shit in the world. So I said, I'm not doing that. I cannot teach this in good conscience. Like, who the fuck would do this? And so I sat down and I said, look, the way you do this is you would get as close as you can to their security area where they're patrolling. And then on a signal from a radio, we're moving in columns fast.
Right.
And then
platoon online, but squads in column.
And we're hauling ass. Right. So we're not going to deploy till they see us. And then we deploy. It's just like a patrolling immediate action drill. And the real critical point is where your squads come together, that seam, to make sure that those guys are aware and they don't shoot each other by getting overlapped. And it's like, well, we could teach this. It's all stuff we already do. So that's what we did over the weekend. And to see the excitement of these Marines, especially the staff NCOs, when they would be a part of it, because they were like, this is going to be scary as shit. These lieutenants don't know shit, man. They've never even been in the fleet. And then
that's what was good about it.
Yeah, it was. And to see it at night.
No bad habits.
I used to get fired up for that shit, man.
Yeah, it was very good. And then we started adding stuff in. So after you left, we added the SMA to it. And I remember we were doing one, and they mistook the bunker they were supposed to shoot. You know how we have those big pit targets with the big metal... like things. One of the lieutenants shot the pits target with the bomb, and you heard this iron plate that was like 4x4 flying through the air. You heard this and come down like a guillotine, like 8 inches away from the lieutenant who was in the prone position. I'm like, thank God, we were so lucky, you know. But then we marked, you know, we made sure we marked the bunker they're supposed to hit. But it was the same. That was like churching it up.
Right.
The thing you designed there was the basic way we did you know, and we just kept doing that. We're still doing that there when I came back as director in 2001. So, yes.
That's all. Yeah. And you know, again, it's nothing genius. And again, it's like, okay, if you were going to do this for real and you were going to bet your life on it, how would you do it? You got to close that open area at a sprint, right? Yep. And you got to pray that they're asleep, and you got to use speed as a weapon. And, I remember the first time we did it, General Allen, then Major Allen, I go to him and I say, hey, sir, this is what I want to do, and this is how I'm going to build in it. And the weekend was really the key part of doing it.
Yes. Exactly.
And he looks at me and he says, Mac, he says, the weekend's very important to this. I said, yes, sir. Sir, look, we're going to wind up, you know, with two squads on the golf course, and they'll know, right, before we do this. And he came out, and you know what, and we had exceptional guys there, exceptional guys there, and they were smart, they read, and but they also knew, and our charter was, we're getting off subject here, but, we had guys like Bill Lynn rolling around saying, the Marine Corps, maneuver warfare, you know, all this initiative. And then you say, okay, well, how the fuck does this work where the rubber meets the road? Like, the squad leader uses his initiative to do what? To change the fucking plan? The platoon commander does? That's not how this, like, I always joke, I watched Hogan's Heroes. I know about the Germans, right? Colonel Klink.
That would drive him nuts, man. Colonel, we love the Germans.
Colonel Klink. He didn't look like a skip and go naked to me, right?
Yeah,
he did not look, and Schultz, he didn't give a fuck. So, like, I'm not sure that I'm buying all this bullshit, but there were guys that did, and they were like, and I caught Furness doing it in Afghanistan. We're talking about the victory plan, and a major writes the victory plan for World War II, a guy named Wiedemeyer. So we're talking about one morning, and Furness walks in, and he grabs a cup of toffee, sits down, because he used to like to hang out where I was, because I'm a cool guy, and all that shit. So Furness sits down, and he says, well, you know, and he says, Wiedemeyer uses the German pronunciation of W, which only the crowdophiles did. And I stopped, and I turned to now I'm a major, he's a colonel. I said... excuse me, Colonel, did you just fucking say Wiedemeyer in here?
Yeah.
He starts laughing, right? Because he knows where this is going.
Hey, I got a quick Dave story for you about that. So I go, after my tour there at the Mew, I come back and I become an advisor, right? There's a lot of shit going on with that. But I'm out again in less than 6 months. I'm back in Iraq.
Whoa.
Right there in that area between Heat and Rawa. That was our brigade area. So I get hit after about 6 months. I get hit pretty bad. I'm in the hospital and I got major skull fractures and fractures of my ribs and stuff. And there's a question as to how brain damaged I am. Now I was always kind of like water damage in the brain. You remember?
Yes.
But, Dave,
he has waxes between Rain Man with this like photographic memory and like, yeah. What is Kenny all
yeah.
that?
So, but me and Dave on the ship, we'd pass each other books that our wives would send us. And Lori, my wife, sent me the book, The Army at Dawn, which is the first in a trilogy by Atkinson about World War II. And this is about North Africa. And there's a part in there where this general who was like in charge of training, I guess Marshall couldn't fire everybody, so they keep this whole asshole, what was his name? Anyway, this guy, he's yelling at the big red one CG, General Allen, he's yelling at Patton saying, why aren't you guys seizing and occupying the military crest? That's the key to victory. And Allen says, look, sir, there's trees here in North Africa, and the Nazis got this thing called the 88, and they shoot the tree, and then the shrapnel gets powered down. So he starts yelling at him again, and I think his name is Drum. I could be wrong. General Drum. Anyway, the Germans hit the tree he's standing under, and he gets wounded. And they're carrying him out of there, and Patton sees him, and he says, General, you, what happened? He goes, I misjudged my defilade. That was his quote. So Dave calls me. I'm in the hospital. I'm in Palo Alto. And He goes, hey, are you all right or what? And he goes, what happened to you? And I go, so I sent him a text that said, I misjudged my defilade, you know? And so that's how that he knew, and I hopefully passed the word, that I wasn't any more of a retard than I was before I got hit, you know? So, yeah. But, you know, that stuff in Iraq and, you know, like what you said, going with your friends is very true because like when I went with my advisor team, a guy who was a second lieutenant with me in 3-8, he later became the 8th and I platoon commander for the silent drill team, and he didn't get augmented. He was like a flawless guy. His name was John Bylus. He came back in the Marine Corps after 9-1-1. You might even have run into him because I know he was working for General, General Sattler in like 2004, 2005. You know, you remember John Bylus, the intel guy. K-Mac is an intel guy. But, yeah, you remember the guys in 8th and I, Mac, I think it was while we were at IOC, they got caught, they were painting the guy's balls with M-New and shit.
Yeah.
The dudes. And that was the guy we know, Dan, good guy. But, you know, the men, sometimes the guys go crazy. Well, you know, he already had a regular commission. But if you remember the struggle a lot of these reserve officers had. So John didn't get augmented for there. And he came back in. And when I went on this advisor team, he was my intel guy. I had 11 guys, the first advisor team. And I was a team leader. And I had 11 folks. He was the intel guy. I had a guy named John Dunn, who's an artillery bubba. Very good. He was my 3, you know. And then and the rest of that team, I was roughly half officer, half enlisted. And we went out there and we had like 3 weeks of training or so, you know,
nice.
And we went out and started advising, and it was very sporty. I mean, the only way you could get these fledgling Iraqis to do anything was you had to set the example. You had to do it with them. You had no authority over them, you know? So, you know, we were constantly trying to get them on the road. And the best way to do that was to go with them. And consequently, we had significant casualties, you know, but
among your advisor team, to include you. So you got blown up by what, IED?
Yeah, it was an IED that hit me in Dulab, this little town outside of Al Asad.
Right.
It was in what we used to call a ball sack, the way the river curled.
One of the great things about about the way things get named is, like, somebody, you'll say, why do they call that the ball sack? And then you'll look at it and like, oh, I know. Like in Fallujah, why do they call that the pizza slice? Oh, it looks like a slice. Looks like a slice of pizza.
Look at the map.
Why is that dead dog corner? There's a story behind that, all right? Do you want to hear it or not? And
yes.
And so there's very the naming convention, you don't need to be a Mensa to figure it out. So what was it? Do you know?
Well, we were trying to stand up a police force of Sunni tribesmen in that area. And that was the Al-Ubaidi, you know, we had the Abu Nimr tribe.
Right.
And we had the Abu Mahal. Remember these guys?
Right.
But we had the Al-Ubaidis, were a little tribe of dudes around that area of, roughly between Heat and Haditha. And, they got pissed by the Al-Qaeda guys would come and demand temporary wives and stuff and take their food. And they finally, in 2006, said they had enough. And there's basically like a guerrilla war going on between this tribe and the bad guys. But some of the tribe were Muj. So it was a struggle to try and, you know, for lack of a better term, try and get their hearts and minds of the guys who are on the other side.
Right.
And we had this dude named Shaban, who was one of the Al-Ubaidi guys, who said, I want to do this fight for this, and, you know, with you guys. I want to join the Americans in this fight against you know, the former Baathists and the Al-Qaeda guys. And the Al-Qaeda guys in that area, you know, that was Zarqawi,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so we said, well, how about you guys become police? Yes, and I will be in charge, and I will be a colonel. So he became a colonel, and Colonel Shaban. And the whole idea was trying to get them stood up. So and that's when you really found out that, oh, my God, the Iraqi army was mostly Shia, but everybody who lives in Anbar is Sunni. And they hate each other, you know, and that was the difficulty. We almost had intramurals, you know, intramural fights because of how tense it got sometimes. And what we were doing the day I got hit was we were trying to we stood up these little firm bases in these little towns like Baghdadi, Juba, and Dulab. And we checked the one in Baghdadi, and we went to Dulab. We checked them, and then at the same time, we ran into the CO of RCT7 was there. Also, he showed up too with all his guys, and it was Colonel then General Crow, Blake Crow. And we're talking in this like little schoolhouse. I remember sweating; it was so hot. It was like the end of May of 2006, the people said, "Look, you guys say you're going to protect us. We get shot at every. For instance, we get shot at every day by this that." That dump down by the river. And sure as shit, there was an ammo dump there. Right. If you remember, Mac, there were these ammo dumps laying around that were just all kind of 155 rounds just laying out there. Remember that?
I went to one with General Kelly. And they were
everywhere. Yeah, there's one down there.
Yeah, we drive into it. This is down by the river, you know, mm-hmm. Past Hit. And because we had heard these reports that at night guys are going down the river and they're getting munitions and that's what they're using for the IEDs. So Kelly says we're going to go there. He's the assistant division commander. So we go out there. And so here comes this skip loader driving down this dirt road, and there's like seven guys in the scoop. One dude's got a bloody bandage around his hand, like, he needs it. So we stop, you know, the corpsman takes a look at the dude, and Kelly gets out with the interpreter and starts asking these guys questions. Hey, what are you guys doing? And it's an ammo dump that's been destroyed. What does that mean? It means they put everything in a big fucking pile, and then they blew the shit up, and about a third of it exploded.
Yeah, and the rest of it's
scattered every fucking where. And these guys really have a salvage business, and they're selling munitions to whoever will pay for them.
Yep.
And so that's what
exactly.
They did.
And they had established a little outpost down there, the bad guys, and to amuse themselves, they shoot at the regular folks sometimes, especially with all this police thing going on. You know, that was like kind of like the center of it. So I said to Colonel Cry, goes, sir, let's just fucking go down there. I got like about 60 guys, you know, it was like I had like four or five of my guys, one vehicle with my guys in it, and about a platoon and a half of Iraqis in the new Hummers they had, which had no ECMs and no comm gear or anything like that in them. And I go, and he had his PSD, a pretty sizable group, you know. So he's like, yeah, I mean, I remember our faces were all red, we're sweating, and we're glaring at you. He goes, yeah, we'll do it. So, bing, in we go. And we start driving, and ba-boom, we're off the hardball on dirt road. And I'm like, ooh. My stomach kind of went cold. I'm like, dirt road. I'm imagining them digging in a hole, like a, you know, like a dumpster-sized IED you could dig in and put underneath the road, you know? And but I remember thinking this, and I feel bad, because I remember thinking, well, Colonel Crowe's up there for his vehicles in front of me. It'll probably hit one of them first. And the guy, and I had, and listen to this, I had the XO of the brigade, Colonel Majid, a very good guy, who was sitting right behind me. And I'm there behind the BFT in the passenger seat. I'm talking to folks in the BFT. We get on that dirt road, and I had him in there, ironically, to protect him because I had the ECMs in my VIC.
Okay, you know? ECM stands for?
Electronic countermeasures that will block a base station signal, which was the most common way of them setting off an IED.
Okay, so
like a cell phone. Yeah, you know?
So it's, you're jamming the signal.
That was the idea. Yeah. And Colonel Crowe had the even way better stuff than we had in his PSD. So I guess the guy in the who tried to set it off couldn't because of this. So he gets on a mini bike and he hauls ass in front of the column. And I hear over the net, you know, I hear, hey, there's a guy on a mini bike down the road. And my guys, kill him now. No, we don't have PID. You remember PID was positive ID.
Right.
And it goes back and forth. And then next thing I know, I got blown up. And the guy got down to a hole and he put two like live wires together in a wooden box and boom. And went off right under our VIC. It dismembered Colonel Majid and fucked the rest of us up pretty good. And, I mean, he was dead. And then I kind of, I mean, I didn't know the difference for months between what happened and, like, hallucinations I had. And I didn't know until I went to Bethesda for, you know, for about a month and a half, 2 months. And then I was in Palo Alto for, you know, weeks. And while I was there, Crowe came home on leave. And he came and saw me up in Palo Alto, and he told me this is what happened. So I could separate, you know, the memories of the thing. The other thing was when I got wounded, I had so many busted, broken bones and everything, and my lungs kept collapsing, that they had me on a significant amount of painkillers, morphine, fentanyl, and, you know, and so I was I just couldn't think straight. But, I recovered pretty quick. I got to tell you, they did a great job of, you know, taking care of me.
How long?
And when I wasn't right. You know that test you had to take after a while to get deployed?
Right.
I couldn't pass that fucker. I couldn't pass it. I never passed it in the hospital. And when I got out of the hospital, General Mattis took over the meth from General Sattler, and he put me in charge of training and advisor teams. And my short-term memory was just gone, you know? Like, I could still remember, you know, the names of Caesar's legionnaires and everything, you know? But I couldn't remember, like, my wife's middle name, you know what I mean? I couldn't remember shit. Like, I remember I got lost driving from Onofre Housing down to Del Mar. I'm driving, like, where the fuck am I? So I pull over at the Pulgas exit, and I'm, like, almost in tears.
No, you are.
I couldn't remember where I was.
I believe a lot of shit. I don't believe, like, you were going to start crying. If you told I got confused and I went to a bar, I would believe that.
I did that, too, which you're not supposed to do, by the way. But so I go up there and I see Horno Canyon, you know, to the north. And I go, okay, now I know where the fuck I am. So who I am. And I got down and I got off. But I'll tell you what, I was paranoid that they were going to try and discharge me for being brain damaged.
Right.
And I avoided taking that test until finally I wanted to be I wanted to go be an advisor in Afghanistan because all this we put more guys in and what a surprise. The surge that everybody talks like Petraeus is some kind of genius. Every Lance Corporal, everybody knew we needed more guys.
Oh fuck, it was just the worst. It was so maddening to watch. And let me just tell you this, and I'll be critical and some of them are my friends. We had general officers that come back. Marine and Army, that should have gone to the Senate Armed Service Committee and said, look, you can have my stars today. But I have to tell you in public, for the record,
we
need more guys. Where we are, they don't do shit. But we're playing whack-a-mole, and now the Iraqi civilians are onto it. When we roll into a community, the first thing they say is, are you going to stay?
Right.
And when we say, well, we're not sure, they say, you see that house that's empty? That used to have a family in it. They were beheaded and their bodies rotted in that front yard after you left because they helped you last time. So I would like to help you. I know you're here for the betterment of us, but I can't help you if you won't stay. And again, I think we have a problem at the general officer level in the United States military of coming back and doing that shit. And then, but they're more than happy to come tell us, hey, you're fucked up. You know, you have a moral obligation to do this and a moral obligation to do that. But you won't live up to your moral obligation to tell the fucking truth to Congress. So.
And you're absolutely right. When I was in Bethesda, one of the few memories I do have, I'm in this room. And I'm in a room with one of Dave Furness's guys. Dave was over there at the same time in the Karma area there, you know, when one was.
Yeah, that's
he I had this guy Sergeant Flynn.
I was with 5th Marines then.
Okay, then Larry Nicholson. And so anyway, the guy who's my roommate in intensive care is this guy Flynn, Sergeant Flynn, who had his spleen removed because he got shot by a sniper. And I'm listening to the commandant go around to the beds. And what do you think we need to do over there? Sir, we need more guys. Sir, we need more guys. Sir, we need more guys. Everybody. He gets to me, and I'm like, sir, we need more guys. But, it was like, it wasn't like genius.
No.
Really pissed me off about President Bush, W. Bush, was he didn't fire the son of a bitch Rumsfeld until they lost the midterm elections in 2006.
Yeah.
You know, that pissed me off. I'm like, this matters. We lost 4,000 guys dead in Iraq. If we had done things the way that, and General Shinseki was no Mensa candidate,
right?
You know, but he was smart enough. Anybody could see to do the thing, to do this counterinsurgency thing. You can't go in there with the light brigade. You need a lot of folks.
Well, you know, I had General Zinni on, and we were talking about this, and he said it was so maddening to watch this. Because, Mac, everything that happened was predicted to have happened in the war plan.
Yep.
The intelligence assessment said if you go there too light and you can't keep the lid on this thing, if you can't keep these three combatant groups apart, they will get after each other and you will have first an insurgency and then you'll have a full-blown civil war.
He said the whole
thing's fucking predicted in it, and we're watching Don Rumsfeld fairy dust it on TV all the time, and as professionals, we're sitting there going, you've got to be shitting me.
And they exacerbated it. That guy Bremer, we dropped these leaflets, OIF-1 saying, just bury your uniform, you know, come out afterwards, we're going to restand up the army and the police, you guys have a job, we need you to, and it was a total lie. You know, nobody who's been a Baathist and no one who was in the government before can work for this new thing. Everybody had to be a Baathist or else you weren't going anywhere. It's like in Wizard of Oz, if Dorothy and her crew, you know, said, okay, hey, you know, you guys with the furry hats and the big axes on poles and you flying monkeys, you mean bastards, we're going to let everybody, you can't have a job. You're out of work now. That's your, you know, yeah, you helped us kill the witch and everything. Now you're helping, but you know, you can't.
Yeah,
so what do they do? Now you're going to have the Munchkins defend fucking Oz? No. You know, you need the fucking people. That whole point of it was liberation.
Right.
Yeah, it was just
stupid.
And, you know,
let me tell you, I can't even see. I see George Bush, and it just makes my fucking blood boil. The same thing with Colin Powell. Seems like a nice guy. But Colin Powell, as a Vietnam veteran, had a moral obligation not to fight optional wars that you don't have to fight. And there's no fucking way that you can convince me that we can coexist with the Soviet Union for 50-plus fucking years, and yet we had to go do Iraq then. And we've destabilized the entire fucking Middle East, and now that has moved into Europe, and that all gets laid at the feet of Don Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Condoleezza Rice, right? Colin Powell, all those dickheads. And so I see George Bush, and I hear him criticize Trump, and I want to say, hey, shut the fuck up. You have fucked up this planet more than anybody is allowed to. Go down there, do your paintings, help veterans, and shut the fuck up and go away.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly
right. Not that I feel strongly about it.
I drive my wife nuts saying the same shit we'll be talking about, you know, that. And I'll go off exactly on that, you know, with, you know, Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and those fucking assholes. And, you know, because it's bad, you know, we understand you're going to go to war – you're going to get, people are going to get hurt, people are going to get killed. But when you see the obvious, you know, way you can cut the stuff way down, and they don't, they won't do it, they won't admit that it was wrong. They'll rather have you die than admit they made a mistake. That pisses you off.
Yeah, and then they write their own version of history.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, hey, fuck you, man. It's such bullshit. Yeah. And again, then you hear a guy like Zinni, who I refer to as the burning bush, right?
Yeah.
And Zinni's a smart guy, but he's fucking combat tested. He reads, he studies it, but he knows bullshit. And you hear him come on and say, it was all in the war plan.
Yeah.
It was all in the fucking war plan. Everything.
But to me, I remember General Newbold saying that.
And he,
you know?
And he ripped it up and he did it, did it, and he became Robert McNamara in Vietnam. McNamara thought he was smarter than anybody, right? You know, with his math models and shit like this and all that. And then he runs the country into Vietnam. It is so eerily similar what Donald Rumsfeld did. It's
that's what I mean.
Creepy.
The best thing you can say about Donald Rumsfeld is George McNamara was worse.
Robert McNamara.
Robert McNamara. You
got a brain. You got a brain injury, so you can get away with stupid shit
that
like
George
that.
George motherfucker sucks too, though. Whoever he is. But you know, exactly, man. It's like, you know, it's just very frustrating. And then what comes after is Gates. Now, I mean, he's all right, you know, but I think his epistemology is, I'm just going to do the opposite of what Rumsfeld would do. And, you know, so things go okay.
That's a good start.
By the time I went over and I was training advisors here at Pendleton and, you know, advisor teams and MAC, there was 90-some teams just for Iraq. And in 2007, we met together, us and, you know, guys up at PMP&O, and we said, you know, it would be logical if the guys on Pendleton trained one bunch and Lejeune trained another because, you know, there was no rhyme or reason as to where these teams were going. So we roughly divided it the Marine Corps ended up with just Anbar after a while. We roughly divided it somewhere between Heat and Ramadi was the dividing line, and Lejeune had everything, or 2MEF had everything east of that, and 1MEF had everything west. And it was like 46 teams. We're talking border patrol, force teams. We're talking police teams and army teams. And also, we only had about seven or eight Afghan teams, and we just pushed that to 3MEF. And so I went to 3MEF expressly, unaccompanied, for 2 years, expressly to go on an Afghan team, which at that time was an RC East. You know, basically that's Nangarhar, Kunar, Laghman, and Nuristan provinces of Afghanistan. I got there as a brigade advisor team leader in July of 2009, and we stayed there till May or so of 2010. And that was another. That was right when President Obama said, yeah, we're going to put in 30,000 more guys in Afghanistan, but everyone's out of the pool by 11 or by 12 or whatever he said.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, why the fuck would you say that? Why would you say, you know what I mean? Why would you say, hey, we're going to do this? But so all they got to do is hang on. You know,
we intercepted, I don't want to give away any state secrets, but right after he said that shit, right? And we listen, right?
Sure.
For those of you who don't know this, we have shit that would scare the shit out of you. But we listen like we've been listening forever, right? So we intercept these phone calls from Hellman to Pakistan, to Quetta, the capital of the Taliban, the operational center of the Taliban, saying, hey, look, just so you know we're working with Americans like we had to work with the Russians. When you come back, we're all about it. We're ready to become your partners again. Can't wait to see you. Really looking forward to it. Hope your wife has trimmed her mustache and hasn't put on too much weight, you know, in Allah we trust, blah, 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 blah. And it's like this, it's like you're watching it going, you gotta be shitting me.
Right.
You've gotta be shitting me. Who does this? Who does it so stupid? But you know what? It works politically, and that's the only fucking thing that matters. And that's why this shit pisses me off. And that's why the linking file between that should be our generals that walk into the Senate Armed Service Committee and says, let me tell you exactly what I think of it. And then if you get shown the door, so fucking be it.
I know it, man. You're a general, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, what else are you going to be, king? Man. Guess what? Yeah. We don't fucking have those here.
That's right. That's exactly right, man. You know, and the thing was, too, the Afghan casualties, that I don't even think we had 1,000 KIA there until after that. Then, holy shit, because along with that, they also had these things where you're not going to attack a compound. It takes that's the only place they shoot at you from is these compounds, you know? And it was just awful. It was just awful. And you know, the one time like Churchill said, the truth is such a valuable commodity in war, it has to be surrounded by a bodyguard of lies. I don't know why these guys didn't read. I guess they, Obama sent back Churchill's statue, the bust of Churchill out of the way, sent it to England. And they're probably like, first of all, they're probably like, what'd they send this back for?
Yeah,
but,
why?
You know, the guy said some smart stuff. You don't publicize every goddamn thing you're going to do unless you're not going to do it, unless you're lying. But they weren't lying. And look what happened. If you go to Afghanistan now, and I was there as a contractor, all that shit we took in Helmand Province, they got almost all of it back. It's awful.
Yeah. All right, so now we're going to have to do this again because you fucked it up again.
Sorry.
No, people sometimes get shocked to hear the venom that comes out of us when we hear the Rumsfeld shit.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this. If you can imagine being there on multiple tours and watching his snarky ass, ridicule reporters when they asked him, are you sure we have enough? Because the Marines and soldiers we're talking to say they don't. They've got everybody they need. They've got everybody they ask for. Blah, 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 blah.
Oh, he used to say, remember he said one time, he goes, that we had this problem in Germany after we won the Second World War. No, we didn't.
The whole fucking world was there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we only had 16 million motherfuckers in uniform. What the fuck, you know?
No, and you read it's like, this guy's doing this shit in public. Somebody call him out for it.
Yeah, well.
Somebody make this fucking stop.
Yeah, I mean, the reporters, they're always telling each other how smart they are.
Oh, they're dumb as fuck.
You think some guy would know that he's full of shit.
Yeah.
And you know, the technology you got now, someone could be checking while you're asking your second question and let you know, hey, that's bullshit. This didn't happen, in Germany after the Second World War, And the reason is, too, and here's the reason. Germany and Japan, we killed all the men of fury. Between us and the Russians, we killed 6 million or so German, military. And in that 6 million was the few guys that you have. Every unit, you got one or two guys, and they aren't the ones who really are highly successful a lot, either in the military or in life. But these are the bone structure guys who win the thing for you, and they're not nice people. And all those guys were dead. We killed all the Japanese who were like that and all the Germans. And what you got left is people who just want to get along, which is what 90% of us want.
Right.
But, to win this thing, I remember, to win in Peleliu, to win in Iwo Jima, to win in fucking Way City, you got a platoon of normal guys, and there's like four or five guys in that outfit who really are pushing the whole thing. And if you're lucky, it's a squad leader or a lieutenant. You got a guy like Hawkins, in World War II in Terra, or you got a guy like Alfredo Gonzalez in Alpha 1-1 during Hue City. But the hard way to win a war is to kill all those guys.
Right.
And that's what happened with Germany and Japan. And that's why there wasn't any serious resistance to our occupation.
Let me read you an email.
Okay.
Hey, Mac, how do you guys really feel? Holy holy shit. You guys need to get back on your meds and quit clicking off safe in front of God and everybody.
Get back on your meds. I had like half a pot of coffee today.
I haven't had shit. I've had one glass of water. Yeah, I know. So, no, this is just... Look, when you see the courage and selflessness that we've seen, and you watch that shit, and then you watch the politicians and the way they conduct themselves, and you're waiting for your generals to stand up for you. And that's the thing that pissed me off about when after the whole sniper urination shit, and then General Amos and Sergeant Major Barrett came around and wire brushed the whole Marine Corps, right?
Yeah.
Right? I remember sitting in that thing, and I so wanted to stand up and say, put your hand up, have you, either one of you two, jabronis, that's a rock, the Rock uses that one. Have either one of you two jabronis ever read The Old Breed on Peleliu?
No shit.
Do you know that this shit and much worse has gone on in every fucking war? Now, I'm not sure if you guys are doing this because you told senators that you'd do this as a PR stunt, but you know what? When are you guys going to have the moral courage to say we don't have enough fuckers over there to fight a fucking war?
Yeah, you know, Mac.
I thought, you know what, Mac?
My last assignment, I had some of those guys working for me at SOTG on the East Coast. And, you know, some of that guys from the 3-2 staple two. And they're good fuckers, man. I mean, and now if a Marine pisses in another Marine's mouth, if one guy pisses another guy, it's legal as long as they're both consensual. So it's like, you know, and these guys are dead. Who gives a shit? Give them weekend duty. Give them a fucking, you know, if that, you know, but, you know, they went after him. I mean, General Waldhauser, you know, wouldn't pony up to that shit.
Well, you know, let me tell you, General Waldhauser is in the crosshairs now. General Mattis just evidently didn't react favorably with the kind of discipline where they gave they disciplined a captain, but again, typical shit. The colonels and the brigadier generals and the people that all sanctioned these operations know we don't have ISR in Africa. Know we can't medevac their ass for hours. They all sign off on it. They know what's going on. They don't do shit, right? Because, you know, they're checking the box onto the next fucking tour, blah, blah, bigger house, you know, nicer base at Fort, wherever the fuck I'm going. And Mattis, if you watch the way he did Haditha, he's not interested in the little guys.
Right.
But he comes with a hatchet for senior guys.
Yeah. So, you know, those guys that were...
Fuck. Not the fucking clock again.
Yeah. The Azam the Lame guy that, you know, we talked about last time, the guy who... Yes. Those guys were in the brig, and Mattis went and spent Thanksgiving with them.
Yeah, those crazy stories that you hear about General Mattis going and doing shit like that, he does that shit. Those aren't like me. There's a lot of stories, like the whole Mad Dog thing, that's made up. Nobody called him Mad Dog.
I know it.
Right?
Know.
Right? And his call sign is Chaos, and it stands for Colonel Has...
An Outstanding Solution or something like that.
Right, right. All right, we're done. Look... Next week, we've got to talk about Afghanistan, because what I want you to educate people on is the fight there. And I've heard it described as, look, there's one, we need a strategic presence. Two, we have to deny it as a safe haven for Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And three, we support the government's fight against the Taliban. And we hope that that has some kind of political... All those things occur simultaneously. So when you talk about victory, what exactly does that mean? Right. So,
well, I'll say this. I'll go, Ma Meekinum. That means I'll do it in Dari.
There you go. So now that we've got the ammunition dump east of Hit out of the way, next next week we'll talk about that.
Okay.
All right, man. Well, Merry Christmas.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Christmas and once again, we hate Don Rumsfeld, okay?
Yes. Hey, I thought, and if Tim Lynch, if you're out there, how you doing, brother? Talk to you soon.
He is. They all listen. I got all this email last week saying, Mac, you need to have Kenny on more often. I'm sitting here in an airport laughing my ass off, right? And people around me are looking at me going, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I heard that too. Good.
All right. Have a good week, man. I'll talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
There you have it, Jeff Kenny. Here's another email. Holy shit. I concur with the last emailer. Get on your meds, hurry. However, as I reflect on the things you said, were I you, I think I would hate their guts too. I do recall the interview with Zinni when he said that. how disappointing to know that you have all that accounted for and some genius shows up, tears up the war plan, writes his own, and you're watching people die because of his ineptitude, and nobody will say a word. Interesting, interesting stuff, Mac. You have some interesting friends. Yeah. No, he's a smart guy and a good guy, and he's been blown up a few times, so Jeff Kinney. All right, we'll take a break. Gunner joins us next here on a Thursday as we continue. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Readboard page at allmarineradio.com.